This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
Bahamas, and welcome to On the Clock with Erin Green. Today is Tuesday, February the 9th, 2021. Now, looky, I wish I could open up this show like we did yesterday, but we got a full slate today. So we just got to have to Jerusalem in our minds, right? Remember, you tuned into Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We are streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969. That's 969 or Flow 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can also text us on the Guardian Radio text line 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. And that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. You can also call us at 323-6232. That's 323-6232, 325-4316, or 326-4259. Today we have a full lineup. I'm going to start my show with guests from the Ministry of Health, and then we are going to move into an interview with a well-known Bahamian who I think we get a drain of knowledge. We got to just drain him of knowledge. I mean, and I'm telling him this for the first time while he's on air. He didn't know I hijack him in here to get all of that knowledge, all of the good things, all of the important things, all of the things he thinks are important for us as Bahamians, as Africans in the diaspora, as brothers and sisters of Christ, all of us to know. And so this morning, Aldington, are we ready for Ministry of Health? This morning, we have Dr. Kelly Phillip joining us to talk about the immunization schedule.
Sure. Good morning, Ms. Green, and good morning, Bahamas.
Good morning, ma'am.
Yes, I'm here to talk about the Ministry of Health campaign 2021 for immunization. The aim is to protect as many people as we can to prevent vaccine-preventable diseases from stressing out people and the health system and our economy.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's wonderful. So tell us, what is the most important thing for us to know about a vaccine or immunization schedule?
Okay, so the important thing to know about the immunization schedule and why it's important is the vaccine is the administration of whether it's part of a virus or bacteria to prevent you from getting the disease, the illness, or death. And the immunization is the process where this vaccine helps you to build up antibodies against the vaccine, the virus, or the bacteria. Our immunization schedule is based on an expanded program on immunization, which has been from 1960s and established in 1979 with the Pan American Health Organization. This schedule is important to protect your children from diseases such as polio, tetanus, measles, pertussis, and they begin at 2 months and up to 10 to 12 years old. Your child should be receiving vaccination. If you remember the yellow card, you as an adult might remember that your mother, father, uncle, aunt took you to get vaccinated, and you're doing pretty well now. And then every 10 years, adults should get a tetanus booster for tetanus and diphtheria.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Can you sort of iterate the importance of the tetanus shot for adults? For me, I, in fact, yesterday, I walked on a nail. Walking through a neighbor's yard, tending some beans, and felt the prick of, about to be the prick of the nail. Fortunately, I am tenderfooted because I'm Nasuvi and we don't know nothing about walking on rocks. And I caught it right before it broke the skin. And I realized how easy it is, even in 2021, to risk getting to get tetanus. So can you emphasize for us how important it is for adults to continue with their tetanus shots?
Right. So it's important because now tetanus is caused by a bacterial infection. It's also known, and the old people might call it lockjaw. Mm-hmm. And tetanus causes painful muscle spasms and can lead to death. Therefore, the tetanus vaccine has made tetanus a preventable disease. So that's why it's important that every 10 years that adults are protected against this particular bacteria, because when that nail enters, that old nail, it then lodges bacteria into your system that can go into your blood, cause, blood infection, and you could die from it. You could get lockjaw and muscle tightening. So that's why every 10 years, so check your immunization card and see if you've gotten your booster. And there's also for adults, who have chronic diseases. Remember, our flu shot is available in all our public clinics free. And then the pneumococcal vaccine as well to prevent against pneumonia.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Can you tell us the importance? Well, let me ask this question. We are a tourist destination. And despite the slowdown in travel due to COVID, I imagine as a tourist destination, we run a higher risk of introducing those diseases to our environment.
It's true.
And so how do we explain to people the importance of maintaining your schedule in this type of environment?
So it's amazingly, if you went on the Ministry of Tourism website, you would find that the Bahamian government has the recommendation for tourists entering the Bahamas. So one, the government recognizes that it has to protect the population. So anybody entering should have their vaccines up to date as well. For those in the Bahamas, making sure that your vaccines are up to date and protecting yourself, particularly against the flu shot, is getting the flu shot is very important. And so the protection is both ways. If you remember, when children or young adults are going off to school, they also have to make sure that their immunization is up to date, because the college that they're going to, whether it's in the United States, the UK, wants to protect its population. So make sure that they have their booster, their mumps, measles, rubella shots, and so forth. So this is not just particular to the Bahamas, but internationally, the world has recognized that immunizations protect countries and populations.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
This isn't new, but this is an international
protocol.
Agreement across all countries. So you come in, you go in, and people would know if they're going to, for example, if they want to go to Latin America, they have to make sure they have their yellow fever. There's also a clinic that used to be in Blue Hill Road.
Dr. Philip, I think Arlington, I think we may have lost him for a moment. And while we were in that break, I remember recently, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, there was a measles outbreak in, is it Samoa, possibly, but a small island developing state with limited healthcare capacity. And there was a major concern because they realized that there were parents in country who had decided that they weren't going to vaccinate their children for measles. And that made it a problem. Well, that created a small issue, and then suddenly there was a flare-up.
It's good to be on your show, Ms. Green, and thank you for inviting me. One of the things as I listen to the lady is the fact that we are a global village. We're not as big or far away as we once thought we were. What happens in Somalia affects me within a couple of days.
Right.
And I think that's what she is saying, that these diseases, viruses, touch us all, we've got to be careful.
And our behavior impacts,
influence one way or the other, how we are impacted by these things.
Even when we think it is the smallest thing, like this thing shouldn't matter at all.
Yeah.
It is my body, is what I'm doing to my body. And then it turns out that that decision does impact every single person on the planet.
You might know, and I haven't been reserved to say it, I was impacted by COVID-19. But I know that I took all the precautions necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't do me so bad because my immune system was strong. My wife reminded me that this morning,
mm-hmm.
that one reason it impacted my legs, but all that respiratory thing and all that, it didn't bother me.
Absolutely.
But I had built up, and I was careful. I'm diabetic, and so I know that I have these prevailing diseases. I think Bahamians need to take this whole thing, be it COVID-19 or the things the lady just said.
Yeah,
we need to take
immunizations
more seriously.
And to take our impact on our environment, on the people around us, more seriously, right? The decisions we make, the things that we do, really do matter to other people.
Of course. And mind you, are we on?
Well, we're on. We're still on.
Okay. Mind you, Sister Green.
Yes, sir.
Mind you, one of the fallacies in our theologizing mm-hmm. is we think, oh, God can take care of us.
Yeah.
So let's do anything without taking the precautions. The science, as along with your Bible,
mm-hmm.
it must stand together, lest we go overboard.
Right, and these are the tools, because science is the observation of the planet, observation of the things around you.
Yes.
Right?
You can't take it just, all you got to do is pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, we must do more than that. We should take the science seriously so that we take it. I've become even twice as careful as I once was before I was impacted. So, yes, we have to be more firm
mm-hmm.
and think about what I do could impact you.
Absolutely. And think about it like this. If you think it's a hoax, if you think there's nothing happening,
yeah.
well, just err on the side of caution.
Don't do it
for you.
Yes.
Do it for others.
Yes.
Right? And that is the attitude we should take.
I love my family well enough to take the chance to be cautious, extra cautious.
Right. And so, dear audience, if I could take a moment. Unfortunately, our Ministry of Health guest was cut off. And we're not sure where she is, but we know she's safe, right? And so I want to introduce my secondary guest, but by no means secondary at all, Reverend Simeon Hall. And of course, you've heard the voice, you know the man, so you know who we're talking about. He needs no introduction. But I want to do a little intro for the show so you get a sense of what we're going to talk about today. Have you ever watched a show called World's Strictest Parents?
Mm.
It is a British show. And in the show, they take troubled and badly behaved young people, minors, and send them to live with very strict families for a week to places like Sri Lanka and Turkey and Barbados and Guyana, right? And so when the Guyanese mother stood on the porch and told those two young British children to get back to this house, even the neighbor's dog stood at attention and marched to her porch, right? That's how strict she was.
Mm.
But there's a number of those shows, and there is one season called Mr. Drew's School for Boys. It's a 4-week summer program where they take 10 to 12-year-old boys in with their parents into a boarding school situation. And as foul-mouthed and rude and profane and prone to physical violence as these boys are, Mr. Drew, the principal, insists
mm-hmm.
that you just never give up on them. And here's why. Because children and young people are exposed to experiences and issues and culture and content well beyond their years. We expect and allow them to behave, well, we expect and allow them to behave like adults when necessary or when expedient for us, but we want them to act like children when it suits us.
Yeah.
And we refuse to acknowledge this quote-unquote state of being, let alone give them the tools to understand and navigate their realities. You see, we have a duty of care to children and young people because we are communal beings. We want to belong to something, something larger than ourselves. The Pope recently recognized the inalienable right to a family, to belong to the group or the lineage we were born into, or the family we choose to create. This extends beyond the nuclear family or extended family. It is about community, about history, about our connections to both ancestors and descendants. It is about the stories we pass on to each other, whether by word or by blood, by the literal blood in your DNA and your RNA and your mitochondria. The things that are most precious and valuable to us that we cannot bear to lose. Like I said, my guest needs no introduction, except this. He is a close family friend. He was and is a part of one of the most important moments in my life and will forever be entwined in my story. You see, when my grandmother passed, the great Corinne Mitchell, it was on Labor Day, and the family had tradition of watching the Labor Day parade on her porch. And everybody, the vast majority of family in New Providence and Nassau went to her house for Labor Day. I did not necessarily share in that tradition, and I did not go to the parade. Shortly after the parade, after, you know, I got called, my mother called me, say, oh, I'm leaving Grammy, I'm going here. I got a call from my cousin saying that Grammy had passed. And I knew that it had hit him. It had hit him. And he asked me to come over. And I came over. And I called my aunt Ona and gave her the news. And within moments, Reverend Hall showed up to the house to pray for my grandmother because he knew that is what she would want. And he knew that that's what the family needed. You see, I invited him here to share the things he thinks are most important for Bahamians to know about themselves, about life, about us. I invited him here to share some of his important stories. These stories are so important.
Oh, yes.
Because we need to understand and know the ways that our lives are entwined. Mm-hmm. And young Bahamians have a right to know how their lives are entwined with the lives of others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those in their community, those on other islands, those so big that they only sit in the House of Parliament to talk to us. All of us, we have a right to know and to belong.
Mm-hmm.
And it is through these stories that we can create these connections and fill these gaps for all of us, but particularly for young people. For this is how you build up a person, by letting them know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I invited Reverend Hall here. This is not the only time I'm going to invite him here to start off a series of intergenerational conversations. And so, as you could see, he already, in his spirit, knew what we came here to talk about today, because he already started sharing. Now, Reverend Hall, you ready?
Thank you.
All right. Here's the first question. What is one thing you wish someone had told you when you were a young man?
Well, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for the level of verbal interaction you brought to this kind of a communication. I really sincerely appreciate this new level that The Guardian and other talk shows lifting to our people. I think that woven into the fabric of our building a community are those special non-physical moments when something hits us to become the better that we are. And my mother baked crabs. You're too young to have known her. She was called Nola the Crab Woman. But she had a sense of business. She had a fourth grade education in Turks Island. And she would tell us she went to school of roast potato. That's what she would say.
Yeah.
But she had a business that fed Queen Elizabeth from Market Street.
Absolutely.
So there are moments that I wish I never knew my father, but my mother was my mother and my father.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wished. I remember one time I left home. We were living on Meeting Street, and I walked down West Street, the graveyard, because my mother told me my father had died. So I thought the little graveyard right there on West Street Hill, I gone looking for my father. It was always a donut, like that hole in my soul that I didn't know my father. Mm-hmm. And I went in the graveyard looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
We need, these young people today need some posts along the way that they can identify, hold on to until I become a year or two older.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we had generations ago. We had some people around the corner who could discipline us, who could tell us, boy, and you dare not tell your ma because you get another beating.
Mm-hmm.
We need some guideposts along the way to, and I thank God that I had some people along the way to stop me and to push me. People hear me with this vocabulary and all these sermons I preach. And I've said, I dropped out of grade school when I was just past my 14th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
School was meaningless to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the teachers, another guidepost, pushed and kept pushing. I dropped out of school. And then a Roman Catholic nun at Aquinas College night school took an interest in me. You need the guideposts.
Yeah.
You know, as I look back now, as I look at where I am today, I preach, I like to brag a little bit. I preach on every island in the Bahamas. I preach on every island nation in the Caribbean. I preach in 40 states in America. I preach in every continent of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I began through a dead-end alley called Chokneck Alley.
Mm-hmm.
The person listening to Aaron Green must know that you can rise up.
Right. You can be anything you want to be.
And what's ever wrong with the Bahamas, with all the negatives, there are still some plateau, some level you could reach to become the Simeon Hall, the Miles Monroe, the Aaron Green, to become. You need to get up off your posterior and be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's me.
Absolutely. So let me ask you another question. What's the most important thing that you've learned about yourself from teenage to adulthood, and how much have you changed? Like, what about you has changed from those sort of formative teenage years? And like, what's the thing that you never expected would become of you? Like, you have.
I didn't think I would have the notoriety, with all my imperfections, with all my limits.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that when I was working for McAlpine Construction Company as a common laborer. I didn't know that. But and I hear you saying this sometimes. You define it different from I do. But when we interconnect the spiritual with the physical, we become the best we can become.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I meandered through all the construction field, and I didn't know, and I was miserable that I could, and I all I knew is I didn't want to be in Granite Pool Company shoveling thing. I didn't want that. And that spirit hooked me.
Yeah.
In theology, it's called God's prevenient grace, the grace that goes before you. Before you were who you are now, something went before you.
Yeah.
And that's what went before me and kept pulling me and pulling me, and I want to be more. I am. So when you listen to people, when I listen to an Aaron Green or the McCartney guy, and you don't even have to agree with them all the time. I don't agree with you all the time.
Yeah.
That's the privilege of having a brain.
Yeah.
That you could think.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but I wish I had learned sooner the importance of education. I failed miserably to grasp the importance of education. But by God's grace, He hooked me back in the classroom, and I took this thing about education was almost an imperative.
Mm-hmm.
That you couldn't do it without a basic education. And I went back to night classes and was able to go off to university, and I've studied at 3 universities, and God has opened some doors for me.
Absolutely.
We have a thing, a teacher said, if the center is off, you cannot get the circumference right.
Absolutely, you can. And look at spirit and science.
Yes.
Coming together.
Yes, of course.
Right?
You need spirit. Man shall not live by bread alone, by arteries and capillaries. There's that spirit.
Right.
And thank God I captured that in my young days. I had people to mature me and to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just we need to take a moment to give a dime about one another now. That's what's missing.
Absolutely.
Your grandparents believe if I spend time with this child, she'll come. We got to spend time with people.
Listen, without a doubt, and older people, you need to know we have an obligation to younger people.
Of course.
To create the spaces for them, to hang out with themselves, for us to hang out with them. And most importantly, you have to create the space in yourself. They will annoy you.
Yes. Yes.
They will bother you.
Very true.
They will disrespect you in a way that it'll make you cry. They don't understand. In fact, I'm going to say it. Some young people was telling me how Nicki Minaj is the greatest R&B and rapper and urban performer in the history of all time. And I almost dug a hole and buried myself in it because I was going to cuss off them little children and tell them, come from round here, Nicki Minaj. Hold on. First of all, Joseph Spence is the greatest musician in the history of the world. He is the foundation of R&B and modern urban music, right? And then Tony McKay gone in there. And you talking about Nicki Minaj? Anyway, and so then I realized, though, Aaron, you old. You can't let these children have their thing.
Yeah.
And encourage them to have their thing. And encourage them to want to be different. And then my job is, in the annoyance, to be steadfast and constantly remind them of the ways that we are the same.
Parental annoyance is when we forget that we were once at that stage.
Yeah.
And to be a little more tolerant. And particularly when the children you row or cuss out were once they're a result of your own pleasure.
Right.
I tell parents all the time, do not fuss or abuse a child who came as a result of your pleasure. You forget how you got it. You forget that Mr. Jones who gave that child to you, in the plainness of language.
Yeah.
That was your tunky-wunky. But a child came forth. So you don't penalize your child for being here.
Right.
Make space. Take a time. And that's that intergenerational phrase you use, that I am 73 years of age. I will be 74 in April. Now, it's difficult for me to know them names or them people, them songsters you just called. I don't know them. Come on.
Right.
I don't know them. But I should be tolerant to sit and listen to my grandson who will be playing that. That's right. What's going to bridge this gap that we're in.
Right. And you need to hear it, right? Because for the Bahamian, like, so I'm 44, grew up listening to rap, and people my age, we know about gangster rap. But if you sat down with your teenager and let them listen to Blind Blake have a song called Jones, Oh Jones.
Oh, yeah.
And it'd have to be the first gangster rap song ever written. Because Jones have a problem with this boy, and he'd taken all of this boy woman. And Jones is tired of it, right? But if you let your children, if you sit with them and let them hear that, right, they'll have a different perspective on the music,
yeah,
on what it means, on your relationship. And then you listen to the lyrics of what he's listening to. You could say to him, man, we've been saying nothing new about that.
That's true.
We've been saying them things for decades.
Mm. One of the things that, you know, listening is a strong item in communication. We need to listen, just mm-hmm. listen. I'm guilty of it sometimes with this talkative tongue I have, but we need to stop and listen. One of my most famous sermons, mm-hmm. I sold 7,000 copies of it, was Why Stagger Lee Shot Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that from Eugene Davis, who got it from somebody back in the early 40s, Stagger Lee Shot Billy. It was a true story. What am I saying? I was driving one day and I heard the song. And right after that, the news came on that somebody was killed. And I tied the two together. Why Stagger Lee keeps shooting Billy
mm-hmm.
within our Bahamian context?
Yeah.
I sold 7,000 copies of those tapes over several years. But my point is, as an elderly person, we have to learn to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the music, I remember when I didn't like Bob Marley's songs.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like them. They just sang because I had this preconceived idea of who he was. But when I listened to Babylon,
mm-hmm.
I said, this man talking truth. You see what I'm saying? Just take away all the cultural and different appearance and just let's listen to one another. What if we were to contextualize it? I'm bold enough to say it. What if PLPs were to listen to FNMs? What if FNMs were to listen to PLPs? We will cross the gap.
Yeah.
Remember, I tell people all the time, both parties are Bahamians.
Mm-hmm.
They're Bahamians before they're PLB.
Right.
They're Bahamians before they're FNM.
Right. And so to you why, and the listening audience, why that story I told is so important,
of
right?
Course.
I'm an LGBT rights advocate and I've been doing it for 20 years.
Yes.
My relationship with Reverend Hall, right, extends beyond my advocacy, right? Beyond engaging press statements and political positions in the paper. Reverend Hall is de facto a part of my family. So the way that I engage Reverend Hall is impacted by that connection in the family. I ain't fighting nobody who in my family. That's just a rule, right? And see, that's a great rule because you live in my neighborhood, you's my family,
yeah.
And I ain't fighting you.
Yeah.
If you live in this country with me, you's my family.
Yeah.
And when we're in the food store and there's a discrepancy over the price, I ain't fighting you. You's my family. You
yeah.
handle, you take care of my food, and I yeah. trust you to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
One of the things that I go further, the theologian that I think I am, not only are we family by living in a neighborhood or we're connected church-wise, family-wise, we are human beings
right.
made by God himself. So when I see people who are different from me, who, whatever their difference is, I see the person first.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the good fortune of travel all over the world. I've preached in Africa 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
I've preached on all the inhabited continents. I've had to interact with people. At the Billy Graham conference in 83, he said he has learned to see people before he sees their nationality, their gender, their sexual preference.
Mm-hmm.
So I see people.
Yeah.
I see somebody made in the image of God. And I prefer to talk to that rather than to talk to your behavior, your preference, your denomination, and whatever, or your political party.
Right.
Just slip that in.
And I let you know, if you call it Johnny Bread, like me and you, I'm still working on that relationship. I don't know if you could be the same Bahamian I am if you call it Johnny Bread.
Yeah.
I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to listen.
Yeah, that's true. We really need to listen, and I think the person's listening to you today, and your effort to try to lift communication and to come with these sometimes way out of the sky things, just listen. And if we could do that, we could lift. I am disappointed with the level of communication in our country.
Yes.
Sometimes from the church itself.
Yes.
Sometimes from the parliament, it leaves much to be desired.
Absolutely.
I think we should challenge. I said when I was in my prime at New Covenant, anybody listening to me should be able to pass BJC English language. Just listen to me as the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to get some. Your grammar should improve. Your Bible knowledge should improve. We need inspirational leadership in this country.
And before I go to this call, I'm going to tell you why. Because Bahamians are hungry for knowledge.
Yes.
They are yearning for it. I work with a lot of fishermen, people who work with fish. Any book I bring on fish, they will look at it. They want to know if you're selling it. Any documentary you have, especially about the Bahamian waters. Bahamians are hungry for information. They want to engage in conversations with informed opinions. And if you have information, give it. Yeah. I was in a situation in the food store recently, and I was telling this young man who's packing the shelf something like, hey, I saw this here the other day. You know how you missed this? You know? Anyway, he went off to go, and I heard the guy saying, oh, she'll talk you to death, right? And I went to the manager who said it, and I told him, I said, yes, I will talk them to death. Especially when I see that they are, there's a gap. And I know that if they can fill that gap,
yes,
they can make that next step in their consciousness, in their thinking. And in fact, as a privileged person, I can say I privilege, right? It's my duty to share as much as I can because these things were given to me for free. Some of these things I teeth when the adults was talking and you wasn't supposed to be at the door, right? I am what you call an amalgamation of coincidences where I had opportunities to experience and be involved in and participate and listen to from my camp counselor who told me at 7, look here, you have a housekeeper, but you're going to learn how to mop and sweep and clean toilets because you have to know these things.
Of course.
You know, to an adult who's able to sit and listen to people who are now politicians and leading lawyers talk about principles, right? And understand. Anyway, we have a duty to create an environment where young people can have these opportunities as well. So I want to ask, that caller disappeared. I'm sorry, caller. You should call back because you could be on the clock. What do you have to say to young Bahamians about marijuana? I know you sat on the committee. And not necessarily looking for a technical, political engagement, but what would you say to young people about marijuana? And that's from 60 straight down.
Well, I think any substance that could have a negative effect should be avoided, like too much coffee, alcohol. I got on the Marijuana Commission when Mr. Fred Mitchell was then Minister of Foreign Affairs, asked me to serve back in 2014, I think it was. The CARICOM community came together, and they were concerned that particularly where young people were concerned, that marijuana was having not only doing damage to some people, but also it was causing many young people to be criminalized. That was the thing that attracted me to this whole social phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Many of our young people, caught with a little spliff, are being criminalized. You get a criminal record, you can't get a job, you can't go to Miami. And you know, all Bahamians think they have an inalienable right to go to Miami.
It is a rite of passage.
Yeah, you're supposed to go to Miami. But no. So I got involved. As a pastor, I have a strong social conscience. I've never smoked anything. Every time I get on marijuana, I have to tell them, no, I've never smoked anything. Mm-hmm. But you know, in parentheses, alcohol, bad driving under influence of alcohol, kill more people than marijuana.
Yep.
So if we're going to damn marijuana, which has medicinal properties, then we should also look at how alcohol and cigarette. That's another conversation. Mm-hmm. I got involved, and when I came back, when we finished, we went to 9 island nations in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. all paid for, all the nice cities. You know. And me, with my aggressive self, every island I went to, mm-hmm. I got hooked up with a church, and I preached there that night. Mm-hmm. While in a conference on marijuana, I'm preaching in the church. So people need to understand that it takes a degree of wisdom, that you are the light of the world, that you have a calling to obliterate some of the ignorance that around you. Not only are you supposed to be smart, you should pass on some of that smartness to the people, to everybody around you.
Yeah.
So I went. I didn't know nothing but marijuana. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I learned quite a bit, but I learned, this was a learning experience. Quinn McCartney was the technical man. He and I shared the chairmanship, but he really did most of the work. Mm-hmm. He knew all the intricacies of, and we have doctors, lawyers, entrepreneurs, common man, all on the commission. Some 23 person for almost 2 years worked it, and we are 99% finish our work, and we're moving on.
Absolutely. Do you think we will see recreational use legalized in the near future?
No, I'm not sure of that. I know that I would hate for this whole debate to become politicized,
right,
and used as a political football.
Yeah.
I wish that more and more the political parties would be united on some items, such as Dorian, we should have been united on that.
Yeah.
Such as COVID-19, we should be. There should be some issues that unite us.
Yeah.
I think marijuana, we should be united on it.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not sure. I know that in the debate, we were all unanimous on medical use of marijuana. People have shown in our islands how they use it. Bahamians use marijuana,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, I doubt you will see the day when, like, we went to Jamaica and several family islands, but in Jamaica, I thought with the legalization of marijuana, you'd see people walking around. That is not so. What they have are spots, little depots that you can go,
mm-hmm.
and buy your stuff with a doctor nearby, and it's regulated.
Yeah.
We are not good at regularizing.
Right.
Regularizing.
Oh, yeah. And and I can tell you why. Caller, please do not go anywhere. I'm coming to you right now. The one thing I want to say to young people about marijuana use is that because it is currently illegal, importation of marijuana and possession, the people who are selling it and importing it are typically bringing it in also with cocaine.
Yes.
And because cocaine is a more valuable product, yes, I think they typically process the cocaine first and the marijuana second. if they are processing these products in the same place and they are following the same rigorous protocols that we follow and everything else, they're probably not sanitizing anything. And so one of your biggest risks of smoking marijuana in New Providence is that it could be contaminated by cocaine.
Yes.
And and that's something that
that's
you really
immediate,
need to...
That's immediate. You get hooked and all kind of things will happen to you.
Caller, you are on the clock.
Good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning.
And good morning, Brother Hollow. Sparky here.
Hey, Brother Sparky. I hear you all the time, man.
I know you do. But first question, Ms. Green, give me a chance to ask him two questions. First question now, you know, where is Choke Degali? I know every corner of Choke. I'm 69 and I walk barefoot through plenty of them corner off Market on East Street and Centerville. Which one is really Choke Degali and why they call it Choke Degali?
I don't know. They say back in the 30s, a woman choked a man to death. That's the legend. I don't know how accurate that story is.
Well, then, that is why, and that's what it could be named.
And then, if you were on East Street and you got to Mr. Palmer's little office there on the corner, you could walk straight west and come into Choknick Alley. If you were on Market Street by Transfiguration Baptist Church, you walk two doors to the south and you... and you come to Choknick Alley. It is now called Woods Alley. Ferguson guy has a rally in the alley through Choknick Alley.
Okay. Give me my time now, because you'll be on the show all day. They got me quick.
And hopefully next week, too.
Yeah. But next thing, Mr. Hall. Now, I grew up in the 70s. I born in 51. And you know, and I know, marijuana has been used in this country. My father, who's dead and gone, told me they was using marijuana back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. Now, this marijuana became illegal because they saw the money value in keeping it illegal. Alcohol was also illegal one time ago. And then tobacco, there was a time when tobacco was illegal. Those commodities have been kept legal because of the financial values. Marijuana is being kept illegal mainly because of the financial values. It's been proven that alcohol and tobacco cause more deaths around the world than any marijuana or cannabis or ganja, whatever you call it, can ever cause. And they keep it illegal because of the financial values. We have behemoths right now, and I know you must have investigated this with all the committee, that have a marijuana farms in Jamaica. Behemoths with monies to invest have their own marijuana farms in Jamaica, sending the marijuana to the Bahamas to make money and to ship it off to Florida.
Thank you, Sparky.
Hello, Mr. Drake. The drugs are really en route to Florida.
Yes.
America keeps it illegal to keep the value of the drugs.
That's true.
All the cocaine and everything is headed from Colombia, Southern America, through the Caribbean, into the Bahamas, to Florida, up to the northern part, all over America, because of the financial value.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Sparky. I want you to know that we know that. And I'm going to have a show to focus on that, right? We talk about the economic impact. But I got another caller, and I got 3 minutes left. Caller, you are on the clock.
Yes, I am. And on the clock, I only want to ask one question.
Yes, sir.
I'm a recovering drug addict, okay?
Yes,
I've been on that for quite a while, and I used to work in a casino. It was an abler. Okay, I'm just wondering why at this opportune time would a government push this forward? Okay, and here it is. We've got a bishop there that sanctions it too. What I'm saying is that when last have you been to San Andreas Rehabilitation Center, the government center? Which you can see this thing breeds a lot of stuff, and it's crowded there. There needs to be built more rooms. Okay, the administration, they need more help. And also, too, the council that is there, they just need a little bit more maturity with this thing when it gets out of hand, because it's bound to get out of hand. I'd like the bishop to expand. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I thank God for your recovery. I don't want anyone to say that I am pushing marijuana. I am still a preacher, still, as they say in the church, saved and sanctified. What we're saying, though, is how can we better address this thing by giving some regularization and decriminalization of this herb? And then there are those who use it for medicinal purposes. So if you want to call me, I'm at the church. We could talk some more. I will be glad to talk with you.
And the point, and you're making a sound point that if we push forward, we need to acknowledge the existing realities.
Yes.
And ensure that we put in place the systems necessary to manage, right, the current realities, but also that we create a culture of appreciation, a holistic, authentic culture of appreciation for the thing and its potential impact. For example, I would not rush to enact recreational use, because I know that there are a number of systems that need to be put in place. In fact, we need to focus on truancy, right? On building up social security systems for young people. And then we must acknowledge this thing here. Marijuana is not the gateway drug. Trauma is the gateway drug. The fact that we have people that turn to marijuana as a treatment for trauma is a massive problem that we must speak to and address by shoring up the same mental health and wellness systems and services that you identified, sir.
We are not going to address the social problems that marijuana or anything else causes until we are open and honest with it. And that's why I joined the commission, and I keep saying I do not promote marijuana, I don't smoke it, but I'm saying it's on almost every corner in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
It's pervasive. Right. We saw it. We went to about 7 different walkabouts, and it's pervasive. So the only way to do it is to bring some regularization to it. One of my big hopes is that if we address marijuana, mm-hmm. we might curb this fight between groups,
gangs
and all
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, absolutely. Reverend Hall, we are right out of time. I didn't tell you this before, but I'm going to beg you to come back next week. Even
right
if I have to bribe you in the whole New Covenant.
You got to bring
church
me some juju.
With tamarind sauce. I got that good stuff. I got that tamarind sauce.
And I forgot my book.
Yes.
We'll talk about that.
Right.
My book is on the market.
It is entitled A Few Reasons You Don't Look Like the Hell You've Been Through. For me, it is aloe. Aloe, I bathe in aloe, straight aloe, because not going to bed on time for 30 years has affected me greatly.
Bless you.
Reverend Hall, thank you for sharing.
I'm glad to. I like to talk.
I think the thing that is going to save us is if we share more.
Of course.
Sharing is caring.
Yeah.
Jesus' two best friends are sharing and caring.
Friend. I heard you say that.
Yes, yes.
It's two. I thought somebody else said that they were his sisters, sharing and caring.
Awesome. Today, I saw three generations of men helping to push a car out of the Wendy's drive-through line, knowing that they were saving all kinds of people, all kinds of heartache. That is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If we all shared and gave 5% more,
yeah.
if we all did a Gordon Ramsay or a bar rescue
yes.
and shared 5% more, we could fix this country. And sometimes, all you got to do is share a story. Share something about
I believe
yourself.
We are redeemable. I believe God is going to save us and lift us up. He did it before, so let's do it again.
Yes, sir. I'm just going to read these last texts. Great show as usual. How could we in Nassau fight the COVID virus and all these export item foods? We're going to talk about that later this week. Good day, Miss Green. Let Reverend Hall know I needed to say hello to him. My name is Frank Carey Jr., and he knows my family very well.
Oh, yes.
You see, this is what telling stories does. It allows us to connect to one another.
Yes.
I've taken all of your time this morning, Bahamas. Ministry of Health, we'll be connecting with you again on Friday. Have a great day, Bahamas. You've
Bless
been
you.
On
Bless
the clock.
You. Thank you.
Yes, sir.